Welcome to episode 126 of the Nerd Extravaganza podcast, where elitism is discussed, not practiced. I'm Tom.
Ryan.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Nick.
And tonight we'll be discussing PC versus console gaming and the apparent arrogance that goes with the former. But first, we'll kick things off in the most humble style with our weekly, geekly, geekly, weekly update. Eric, why don't you lead us off, man? What have you been up to?
I have been injured, which should be no surprise to anybody. Honestly, how many times have we done an episode where I have been sick, injured, or severely injured?
How many episodes have you been on?
Yeah, most of the ones I've been on, I think.
Yeah.
In this case, though, it was an injury that I can't even explain. I essentially misaligned my pelvis.
Oof.
How I did this, I have no damn clue. Basically, we recorded the last episode. I woke up the following morning in agonizing pain. Needless to say, I'm going to beat you guys to the punch, and no, it was not a sex-related injury. Unfortunately, I guess. But yeah, I don't know how you misalign a pelvis, but apparently you realign a pelvis by getting every bone in your body cracked repeatedly by a big bear of a man.
Oh!
That could be how you got it.
It could have been in the first place. So, I know that's not that nerdy, but I guess it's kind of nerdy. Cause...
Well, it's nerdy. I mean, it just shows the rigors of geek-related podcasting. You can hurt yourself.
Yeah, he actually mentioned that it was possible by leaning over a computer too heavily and kind of putting your hips out of alignment.
There you go, man. Don't get too into this, Eric. We're doing it kind of for fun.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what I did. And it was right after podcasting, so mm-hmm. I'm going to be careful on the hips this podcast around. It's dangerous work.
Okay, we won't get too controversial.
It was that Alien versus Predator question. You like leaned in and got angry and started slamming, debating, and
yeah.
It might have been Independence Day.
That'll do it.
Yeah, that will do it. Nerdy wise, though, the one thing I can say is I discovered something that I definitely am eager to try and have actually even pushed the district to include in some of our science and engineering competitions districts-wide, and was told that if I'm willing to lead the project, that it will happen. And it's something I think you guys would like. I've discovered this essentially tabletop game, it's not quite a tabletop game, although I guess you play it on a tabletop, called Siege, S-E-E-J, which is really dumb spelling, but it doesn't bother me. And essentially what it is a baseline 3D printed catapult system with some 3D printed flags and bases that you can assemble. And of course, the idea is to shoot pennies at your opponent's base to destroy it. The rules are essentially anything you can print to add to your catapult to make it better is fair game.
That sounds cool.
So over the next few weeks, I'm going to be printing and assembling some base models. And I may have to bring it to game night one night so we can try it out. I'm going to need some test subjects.
I'm in. Please bring it.
Aside from that, my week has not been that nerdy. It has been more about laying in bed trying not to hurt.
So sorry about that. So sorry that we caused it, and I'm glad you're on the mend.
Oh yeah, much better now.
Yay! All right, is that it for you?
That's it for me.
All right, let's have Nick go next.
All right, well, I had some friends from Miami come up to the Broward area, and we went ahead and participated at Tate's Out of This World event that they had. So I guess they had a sale throughout the comic shop, like 10% off at the very least. And then I don't really know much of the details of anything else that was on sale. They had like the tent outside and with all the, I guess it was kind of like the Ross of comic book like shopping, like, you know, whatever you can find in that mess, you can go ahead and like purchase. And then we mainly did a lot of the shopping inside. When we went inside, my friend beelined over to the Weeaboo section, and he bought like a 12-inch Godzilla figure. It was from the Toho series, the 1962 version that was from Godzilla versus King Kong. So he was ecstatic, $160 ecstatic, but you know, happy nonetheless, because he's a huge like kaiju fan, and he collects a ton of Godzilla figures. And then a couple other friends bought a bunch of like Spawn trades and stuff, and you know, they were having fun doing all that. I went out empty-handed because I'm more of a I'm when it comes to like comics or anything, like I usually go digital. I don't feel the need to have these trades in hand and stuff. And the one thing that infuriated me, like I saw, you know, some people dress up and like so be it, have at like do what you want, but I saw this fucking kid. He must have been a few years younger than me. And he was cosplayed as Ash Ketchum from the Pokemon anime. And, you know, like, there's usually distinct features on, like, anime characters from different series and stuff. So, like, Ash has these, like, sideways lightning bolts on his cheek. And, like, the kid went ahead and, like, drew those in as well. And I was like, you just look like such a fucking tard. But, I don't mean...
Wow.
Fuck that cosplay stuff.
I don't know why that got me so angry, but maybe just the fact that he was that old and cosplaying as that particular character just infuriated me, but whatever, to each his own.
I feel like we need to kind of unpack this a little bit, Nick, because you were probably of an age with this guy, it sounds like, or close enough?
Yeah.
Okay, and you were yourself a mega Pokemon dork as a kid?
I was.
So I don't see the problem. I mean, you don't admire a member of your cohort representing?
I don't know. It was just... maybe I was just being extra bitter that day or something. I was trying to find something to nitpick at. And also, like, gaming-wise, there was a free weekend on Steam this past weekend, and I played a bunch of the games that they had going on, about 10 of the games, and the one that really caught my eye was Injustice God Among Us. Like, even though that game was a year old, like, it was the Ultimate Edition, or the repackaged edition that they put out for free. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed that game. Like, a lot. Like, it's not the most fluid fighter. I think if I owned the game and, like, you know, practice a bit, like, I would understand the mechanics, but it was still, like, a really fun game, like, much better than, what was the previous one, Mortal Kombat versus DC, so much better, like, it was just a great game to look at and play. I played it with a friend of mine over the weekend, and I think next Steam sale, like, I'll probably pick it up around then, hopefully.
Nice.
Yeah. And finally, I got on the... you guys familiar with Loot Crate?
Yes.
Yeah, I kind of suckered myself into that one. So I subscribed for like 3 months because they were doing it. A website was hosting a deal, and it seemed enticing. And this month they were doing, I think, like Capcom and The Walking Dead. So if you did it before midnight, which is... like yesterday, that when you sign up for it, you get this month's crate and then the next 3 ones. So I thought that was really interesting. Which, speaking of, like, I really was pissed about The Walking Dead, like, the last season that just passed. But this new season that just started for the past 2 weeks, it's actually been pretty interesting. Like, I was trying to find things to hate about it, and I couldn't find much. I thought it was... I think it's doing good so far. I can't say for the whole season overall. Just
as long
started.
As it's Ash Ketchum free, huh?
Yeah. But yeah, that's it on my end.
Cool. Well, we were glad we were able to find a few diamonds in the rough. It sounded like you had a rough week at Tate's, number one comic shop in our region as far as we're concerned.
Number two, Max. Don't forget Max.
After Max, of course. Sorry. Whoops. My mistake.
You know what's funny is I did have a chance to go out to the sale, and I spoke to Tate for a little while and mentioned that particular article that we discussed prior. And perhaps he's listening, because he did ask me for the information on the podcast.
Oh.
Which was kind of cool. I even asked him what comic shop that was, and I guess he knew it, but he was just as blown away as the rest of us. Not that he was tooting his own horn, just that it was that one.
Hmm, interesting. Well, more importantly, you secured him as a guest on our show.
Oh, that's possible, if he's listening.
Nice. You better be listening, Tate. Awesome. Okay, Nick, I guess that concludes your update, and that brings it to Brian.
I had a rather eventful Thursday night. Not only did we nail down our position in the upcoming mini-con, where we will be doing part two of our podcasting series. I'm kind of excited about that. But I also played one of my favorite kinds of games, and I'm looking forward to sharing this with everyone else. I think for our Halloween event, it's called Cards of Cthulhu, and it's cooperative. 1 to 4 players try to overcome the mad forces of the Elder Gods, and it is just impossible to win. We died in the second round the first time we played, and I think we made it all the way to the fourth round the next time we played, so we got much better.
That sounds horrifying and perfect for Halloween.
It's so, if you've ever read any Lovecraft, it does not pull any punches. I've always loved that Lovecraft games just don't let you win. I mean, you're not supposed to. You die horribly in his stories, period.
Awesome, man. I'm looking forward to that.
And my Saturday night was spent in Fort Lauderdale at the Retro Arcade Night.
Ah, yes.
They had a part two of that. Looking forward to part three. That was really fun. I feel very old with what they define as retro, but, you know, it's still the best in town, so I'll take it.
What's retro now that we don't probably think of as retro in your mind?
Street Fighter II.
That's pretty retro, man. I mean, it's hard for me to believe, but yeah, that was like
that falls in the realm of retro, especially Oof. These days.
Shut up, Nick.
Okay.
they had just gotten an X-Men versus Street Fighter arcade cabinet, and that Ooh. Was like the big news. Like, oh my god, we scored this retro game. It's so old.
I totally remember playing that yesterday. Like, what do you mean it's old? God. Cool. Well, I'm glad you had fun at Retro Game Night. Did you see our buddy Steve Kleisath?
I did. And it's really surreal because since his episode, he has, in fact, beaten the record and has been verified and is now the world record holder. It's so surreal hanging out in a room with the best person in the world at something.
Yeah. Did he have his belt on? Was he wearing the championship belt?
No. He was doing, like, kind of crowd relations, so he wasn't really showing off. People would keep, you know, distracting him and asking questions.
Understandable. Awesome, man. Sounds like you had a full weekend. Is that it for you?
That's it.
Okay, my update is super simple. I am preparing to depart Seattle to head home via Disneyland and Disney World. So I'm going to go down to Anaheim, hit up the Disneyland, then shoot over to Orlando, Florida, and hit up the Disney World, and then from there head home.
Woohoo!
Yeah, I'm looking forward to a pretty cool remainder of the week. And apart from that, playing some more Final Fantasy XIV. Brian assisted me in leveling up my Marauder class, which is the second step I need in order to turn my Lancer into a Dragoon. And if that's not nonsensical enough, I will add a little more nonsense jargon to the conversation by letting you know we did a lot of leave quests or leave meets or guild hests, or, you know, the jargon in that game is such that I don't even have it straight, so never mind.
Nice. What really cracks me up about that is you actually didn't even say the thing that we did. It was fates that we ran tons of.
Oh, that's right. We ran a bunch of fates. Yeah, we did that too, or mainly that. I don't know. It was very productive. Good job, us. apart from that, I watched a new anime called High School Seiha Girls, I think I'm pronouncing that right, which is all about personifications of Sega consoles from the past attending a school where they have to earn credits toward graduation by playing classic Sega games. And of course, by playing classic Sega games, I mean being transported into the games. So they're only on the second episode, and they have made their way into Virtua Fighter, where they were able to prevail. It's pretty funny, actually. It's kind of cute. And if you're into Sega or just really goofy anime, I would check this out.
Despite my dismissal before we started recording, it actually sounds interesting. I just didn't like the picture that it displayed when you posted it on Facebook. I was just like, ugh, what is this garbage? But Since you just ran down the synopsis on me, maybe I'll give it an episode or two.
Check it out. There were moments in the Virtual Fighter episode where I was actually chuckling. It was just kind of funny, the antics going on in there. And you may be put off by their little chibi, super deformed look, but that ceases when they enter the game worlds. They take on normal proportions, if that helps you at all.
Gotcha.
So, all right, that's it for me. And I think we can get on with tonight's main topic, which is PC gaming versus console gaming, specifically this notion, this tongue-in-cheek notion of the PC master race. I want to start by saying I'm still not really comfortable with master race being tossed around, even jokingly. I'm not sure how that became acceptable. But here we are, and we certainly do have a subset of gamers out there who think PC is where it's at, and if you're a console gamer, you're just some kind of a rube, and you know we're superior. And why? And they turn their nose up at any kind of a console version of a game. So I guess a helpful place to start would be to see if we have any of these assholes in our midst. And I'll go first. I am not one of these assholes in our midst.
Neither am I.
PC is just another console to me.
That's acceptable, yes. And Nick?
I am a pseudo-asshole. I don't fully portray that, but I do have a lot of belief behind PC gaming.
Okay. Well, we have some talking to do. I thought this was going to be a short episode, but it might take a while now. I will say that, as I mentioned in, I think, last week's episode or the week before, I had a little PC gaming session. It was just some local multiplayer stuff that didn't require a super beefy gaming rig, but I definitely bought into the PC delivering a console-like experience. And then, of course, I know that that's not even what PC gamers are necessarily after. They swear by mouse and keyboard over a controller, and for certain games, that is a better way to play. But I'm not against PC gaming. Every single year I contemplate building a PC. Every single year I never quite get around to it. I'm really giving it some thought, but I don't see that leading to me abandoning my consoles. So let me ask you guys this right out of the gate. Why do PC gamers, or whether it's tongue-in-cheek or serious, and I hate to say it, but a depressing number of these folks are probably serious when they say this stuff, why do they think they're better than console gamers?
Because they have the ability to have higher resolution and frame rate on their games. And that they're not always nickeled and dimed by DLC. Not always. Some games do, like some of the AAA games, but not all of them. And I think also that there's a lot... modding. Modding has a big part to play, I'm sure. And some developers will actually do free updates as opposed to the paid DLC, like the constantly paid DLC that consoles hold.
You know, the one thing that I will agree with you on, and the one thing I'll actually give complete credit to PC gamers for, is the mods and the mod community. I think the last PC game, and this is going to date myself, but the last PC game I think I played with any kind of real fidelity was Quake 3. I played a lot of Quake 3. And that said, I loved the mod community even after I realized it was completely worthless. Now, that said, it was completely worthless back then. It is not completely worthless now. I have seen games transform into entirely new games.
That's what you get for fucking calling the PC worthless, Eric.
Yeah. Striking back. Worthless, am I? Doing any sort of trash-talking towards a PC while you're recording on a PC apparently has certain karmic effects, because we have lost Eric via our remote chat system. So Brian, until he offers a proper sacrifice to his computer so that he can get back online, why don't you offer your opinions on this idea?
I agree with the modding community. I don't agree so much with the DLC community, because this goes back way before paid DLC. I mean, people were having this discussion in, like, 2001.
True. I will say I can pretty solidly come down on the side of better performance, you can get crazy with a PC and just get some really incredible resolution and frame rate. But that comes with a cost.
A pretty substantial cost, which I believe is the reason for their superiority.
Okay, I've got the funds to lay out all this cash on this gaming rig. You don't, therefore I'm better, basically.
Yeah, well, I don't even know if it's in you don't. I don't know if they have to take it that far. I think it's, well, I spent $2,000 and you spent $200. Mine's better.
Yeah, and that $2,000 versus $200 is not much of an exaggeration. And it kind of makes me wonder about the value proposition, because you may get nickeled and dimed over the long term on a console when it comes to DLC and stuff, but your upfront investment to get up and playing is substantially less than if you were to build a higher-end PC especially.
Well, yeah, that could easily be turned around on you, but actually a solid PC, like a solid gaming PC, would probably cost you $1,200. I mean, not that that makes that any better, but I'm just saying, like...
So as much as a console and 16 games?
Oh, bam! Oh, damn!
Well, I don't know. I guess it just depends, like, what you're looking for. And if you have the funds to spend.
That is a fair point, though. And let me say one of the things that's kind of stays my hand when it comes to building a PC is when I have done it in the past, there's no way I'm just spending $1,200. Like, I'm, like, on Newegg or whatever shopping, if that's still the place you shop for this stuff. And, well, you know, I could get this middle-of-the-road component, but for only a little bit more, I could get the highest thing out there. And the next thing I know, I've got all these high-end components, and that $1,200 has shot up to around the $2,000 range.
Oh, well, of course. Like, if you want to buy, like, some... you just got to know... I don't know. You just got to know what is a good range and what you're looking for and what you're looking to do with the PC.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is it's easy for somebody who's prone to fall down spending rabbit holes like me to get in real trouble building a PC. Mm-hmm. What about you, Nick? You have a fairly recently built machine. Were you able to be moderate in your spending?
Yeah, I was. I did everything. I got most of the things that I got was within a decent range. I put my budget at about $800, so I kind of got like a top processor, a decent amount of RAM, you know, a decent motherboard, and like other works. But I kind of sacrificed a little bit on the video card, because it wasn't of that importance. I just got like a mid-range video card, and then probably about a year later, I got myself like a decent video card. So if in the long run, I end up spending, if I had to include that video card a year later, probably $1,100, $1,200.
Okay, but you were able to delay the upgrade until later, so you could distribute some of the costs over time.
You could.
Okay. Let's, I guess, pause here, and Eric just messaged us and said he can't dial back in. Let me add him to the call. Can't do this on an Xbox. Oh!
Apparently you can't do it on a PC.
This is what we go through every week to bring a quality podcast to the masses. Well, guys, it doesn't look like Eric is going to be coming back unless the lords of the internet, who are no doubt PC sympathizers, allow him back on. So it's just the three of us for the remainder of the episode. We got some of his views in. We kind of know where he stands, I think. So let us press on. Now, Nick, you were able to buy a mid-range PC and then distribute some of that cost over time by upgrading components. The upgradability of a PC is kind of a cool feature. But of course, there's a window in which you can still cost effectively upgrade before, you know, you might as well just buy a whole new setup.
Now, let me ask you this. Is that $1,200 including gaming mouse, gaming keyboard, monitor?
Yes. Yes, it is.
That's pretty reasonable if you consider also that you are buying a machine you can do other stuff with.
Yeah, the purpose wasn't only gaming, but it was definitely a big part.
Yeah, well, with that considered, I mean, I guess it's sort of a matter of just how much cash you have to lay down. Let me ask you guys about this. at least in my mind, it looked like PC gaming was kind of on the ropes there for a while. With, like, some games, with mainly the console being the center of the gaming universe. Until, of course, and this is hardly news to anyone or a revelation, but until download services like Steam, especially Steam, pretty much exclusively Steam, came online and sort of provided this great way to get, like, all of this PC gaming content. And I think that has done a lot for PC gaming. It certainly made it more appealing to me. I do some PC gaming, so I don't want to imply that I don't. And Steam has really made that kind of cool. It's kind of like it entices you to try new games, you know?
Yeah, they have seasonal sales, you know, for fall, winter, and summer. And sales that will go on for about 2 to 3 weeks and easily make you spend, like, cash that you don't even have or need to be spending on. And then also, like I discussed earlier, the free weekend. Basically a full-fledged demo with no holding back. You play as much as you want for the entire weekend, and then they have a sale on the game while they're having the free weekend. So if you like the game enough and you were enticed, you're even more enticed to purchase the game as you're testing it out that weekend.
That's pretty cool. And Brian, I think you will admit as well as I will that you have been enticed with a Steam sale from time to time.
Oh, yeah, man. I love those, like, 37-cent games.
Yeah. I mean, I think, will we all confess to a library of Steam games that we haven't even played?
Yeah, I will, easily.
Whoa, and Eric comes back. Praise the PC gods. Our positive talk surrounding the PC as a gaming platform seems to have paid off. The PC gods who run the internet have deigned to restore your internet access. Welcome back, Eric.
Yeah, welcome back, although this did not do anything for my love of PCs.
Please do not talk any more smack about PCs, man. We're really on thin ice here.
Are we? Is it getting bad? I don't know. I missed it. So I'm excited to listen to the episode next week.
In your absence, we basically were talking about how, yeah, there's kind of a big cash outlay for a PC. Nick was able to mitigate that somewhat by buying the base rig and then buying some parts later, and there's always the upgrade factor of PC that's kind of appealing. And then from there, we kind of moved on to Steam and download services as adding a lot of appeal to PC gaming. Are you a Steam head, sir? Have you...
I don't go that crazy. I do only buy things that I assume I'm going to play. And honestly, my only legitimate reason for ever purchasing things on Steam is to get me through the summer drab non-gaming months that are the desert wasteland of the gaming year.
You're speaking of console gaming specifically, because you're primarily a console gamer as well, right?
I am primarily a console gamer. It didn't used to be that way, actually. I made the transition as a child and into my college years. I was definitely a PC guy.
That's interesting. Usually it's the other way around.
That all changed, honestly, with the PlayStation 1. Mm-hmm. That is where the big transition happened for me. I think Resident Evil is to blame, to be honest.
Oh, fantastic. Tank controls and everything.
I know. You know, at the time, that didn't bother me at all, but nothing on the PC was that atmospheric except for maybe Myst, and, you know, it's not quite the same thing.
Oh, definitely not.
What about Doom? And that was deeply atmospheric.
Ah.
It was so red.
It was for the first 5 minutes, and then you didn't really care what was about to pop up at you.
Doom has a recent mod called Brutal Doom, where it just makes it kind of updates the atmosphere a little bit. Not like not graphically, but just the way it plays.
Is it spelled with two O's, like Brutal Doom?
It definitely ups the gore factor. I did feel the need to give it a shot. And it's a cool mod, but again, short-lived. I guess something I was mentioning before I was dying is the one thing about the mod community that I do love now is it does change a game into essentially a whole new game. And I think the Grand Theft Auto mods, the Skyrim mods are kind of really key in that one, especially all the Half-Life mods as well.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, mods are definitely something you lack on the console. Brian, you kind of convinced me of the magic of mods, I think, back when you were playing Morrowind on the PC several years ago. I believe we had a conversation surrounding that back during that time frame.
Oh yeah, I love the mods on that. That was cool.
Do you have any naked cat people running around? Is that what we're talking about?
No, they did some really great... Like, they basically turned the game into Doom, where they're like, screw storyline, you're teleported into a magic realm with a shitload of zombies. Kill them!
That's awesome.
And it was like, you know, you would slaughter 100 zombies and loot would drop, and then you would just do it again.
So it was a gameplay mod, like it turned it into a new game. We're not just talking look and feel mods, which are also out there.
They had a lot of look and feel mods, but I don't know, I was never into them quite as much.
Isn't that how these MOBAs came to be? Was it League of Legends or Dota? Whichever one grew out of a World Warcraft 3 mod, wasn't it? I'm almost positive. I'll just go ahead and say yeah to that one.
I didn't want to answer because I didn't know. I didn't have a definitive answer.
It was one of them. Whichever one came first grew out of the original version of it grew out of a Warcraft 3 mod. So that just is another feather in the modding cap, I guess, when it comes to PC.
Mm-hmm.
So we've established that PC gamers are haughty and arrogant because they spend more money, they have more freedom, and they like to mod. And they also like Steam, which I think is a fair reason to be haughty. But I want to ask you guys about the effect that something like Steam has had on consoles. Now, I'm not saying Xbox Live with its online store or PlayStation Network or Nintendo's online offering are a response to Steam, but they have certainly had to march to Steam's tune, meaning you have sales, you have promotions, you get good deals on games. Whereas I think left to their own devices, these console makers would just like, yeah, you could buy like full price games forever on our store. I think in that way, PC gaming has positively influenced the console gaming experience. What do you guys think about that?
I would go so far as to say it is a response. I think they had to start doing that.
So as of the Xbox 360 and PS3 era, they were like, oh, this is a must-have feature. We have to do this or PC's going to clean our clock.
Yeah, I think once PC started re-emerging, they were afraid things were just going to like swing the other way. So they really reacted to it.
What do you guys think about that, Eric and Nick?
I agree. I definitely think it was a response by the console community. The only thing that I'll say, I guess, is a little bit different about the two communities is the isolation. Like, when you're on a console and you want to choose something from the store, you have exactly one option. Steam is not the only option out there. I don't know if that's been made mention, but Steam is far from the only option.
Oh, definitely.
It seems to be the most popular option, and it's definitely like a... probably the most abundant resource, but that doesn't make it the only option.
You are correct about that, and pre-show, Nick and I were talking about EA service, I think it is, Origin, right, Nick?
Correct.
I don't know if that's a viable option.
they're trying to be. I mean, they're not the best.
Technically, I'm trying to be.
Trying to be what?
You can buy my game online. I'll give you a sweet deal for it.
I think the point you made pre-show, Nick, was that Origin has really been shaping up and getting their game together as they try to build themselves into a serious Steam competitor. Is that correct?
Yeah, but they are like the TNA in the wrestling world. Like WWE will always be number one as Steam would be, but you know they try to at least be a solid number two. Origin, that is, and. You know, I see that they, because I'll see, like, on gaming sites that they'll post that Origin is giving away a free game. Granted, it's, like, a game that's several years old, but it's actually, it could be a solid game if you haven't played it, because Lord knows these days with, like, people's backlogs are just unbelievable in games. Like, you know, there's games that you can miss. Like, I've seen games that have been free, like Dead Space. Dead Space is a really good survival horror, probably one of the better ones in recent times. And, you know, and then sometimes they kind of have their sales, but I don't really follow Origin too much. Like, every once in a while I'll take a look, but... And then that way, and also it's my only way of playing a Titanfall on the PC is I have to log into Origin.
They force you to, okay.
Yeah.
Force exclusivity is their biggest customer.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we have a contender in Origin only insofar as they can compel people to use their service.
And also Green Man Gaming is a really big one. Like, it's definitely the number two in PC gaming sales, I believe. They'll match Steam's like big sales, or maybe even do better sometimes if you keep an eye out for it.
I was going to ask about that, and I don't know, Brian and Eric, if you have any experience with that. Is it a Steam-like experience? Like, you have a dashboard and you can download games and everything?
Well, they sell Steam keys.
Exactly. So they are purely purveyors of merchandise. They are not, like, they're not trying to sort of bring you into an ecosystem necessarily.
No. And if I remember correctly, I think they have a feature that if you don't... Oh, you know what? It was Origin that has that. I told you earlier that Green Man Gaming, if you didn't like the game within a certain amount of time, or you had any complaint about it whatsoever, you can get your money refunded. Like, they'll just take your ability to access the game and they'll refund you. So that's one up that Origin has that Steam doesn't. You don't get refunds on Steam. So I found that kind of interesting in Origin's defense.
That is kind of cool. You have to probably then turn around and buy another EA game with it, but that's still cool.
I don't know exactly if it's credit or they'll give you your cash back, but either way, like, I think that's an interesting feature.
It is. And that kind of brings me to my next point. Well, you mentioned feature, and that kind of got me thinking.
You know, can I jump in on this one real quick before we move on? Because I don't know if it was discussed while I was, you know, absent, but one of my favorite gaming repositories is GOG, which I don't know
good
has
old
come
games.
Up. Yeah, Good Old Games is fantastic, yes. Especially for somebody like me who likes to live in the past, and my past was definitely PC-oriented. Much more so than my present is.
The nice thing about those games is it's actually DRM-free. If you have
completely
a complaint
DRM free, yeah.
Yeah.
And that is a place to get classic games, basically, right?
They signed a deal with Ubisoft, or Ubisoft, I don't even know.
I believe it is officially Ubisoft. I got confirmation.
It is Ubisoft,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay, good. They signed a deal with them to carry their entire back catalog, so they do have that. And again, DRM free. So it's not entirely purely old stuff, but it's all, you know, relatively old stuff. The nice thing about it is they actually did finally launch their own, I guess, user interface similar to Steam called GOG Galaxy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and so far, you know, so good. I know it definitely, from, you know, what I've messed around with, feels a little beta. And I'm sure it is. But for the most part, I mean, it's a nice little treat. I mean, ultimately, my favorite games on PC were point-and-click adventures, which are basically dead at this point, which might be why I am no longer a PC gamer. Anything that Sierra or LucasArts threw at me through the 80s into the early 90s was just... That was all scripture for me.
I'm with you. So you're telling me I can get my Monkey Island and Quest for Glory on.
Yes, in fact, when the announcement was made that Sierra was picked up by... who was it? Is it Activision or...
Probably.
EA. I think it was EA, actually. Sure. There was the hope, of course, that a lot of these titles would be rebooted, and my first one was, please give me new Quest for Glory.
I like that series a lot.
Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic series. It doesn't get nearly the credit it should in the world of point-and-clicks. I think it's because it was at the tail end.
Well, actually, the series is pretty long-spanning, as I recall, but yeah, I know the last installment was, I think, 5 or something like that. I remember it was on the shelves when I worked at a video game store, and I was like, wow, this is still going?
Yeah, I think that's the same problem Grim Fandango had, is that the console generation had really kicked off at that point, the console craze, and the point-and-clicks were on their way out the door, and I think Grim Fandango was, like, the last grasp to really make a point and click successful. And it was. It's absolutely a fantastic game. And the fact that it is now coming to a console instead of back to PCs, which it's not even available on anymore in any context, might add something to this conversation.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. That's interesting that they would make a move like that.
So on a side note, Eric, you haven't tried any of the Telltale games?
I have, and I like them, but they don't feel exactly the same.
Okay.
First of all, I play them all on my iPad.
Okay.
Because, one, I don't really feel like having them on my computer or laptop and carrying them around with work stuff and all that and having them take up space. And honestly, I have been waiting and waiting for point and click to really, really grab a hold of touchscreens, and it hasn't. It's there, and they've tried. Like, you know, you can get the Monkey Island games for the iPad. They're there on the App Store.
Mm-hmm.
But I really expected this to be, like, a major push. I wanted to see Sierra back catalog. I wanted to see tons of LucasArts back catalog, and it's just not there.
Ew, playing on a mobile device. What's wrong with you?
Well, you have to consider that the iPad is still stronger than any PC I was ever playing those games on. And it's a touch interface, which is beautiful for a point and click.
I think my toaster is probably stronger than any PC you were playing on back then, but I don't know if I want to play games on it.
But it makes food at the same time.
It does make delicious toast. It does do that.
You can put Hot Pockets in it and you're all set.
Yes.
Although, my favorite point and click of all time, and it's a little known one, is Freddy Farkas Frontier Pharmacist.
It's new to me.
Again, this is a Sierra one that was a little later in the game. I want to say maybe late 80s, early 90s. I could be way off on that. It has one of the longest, most obscure titles of all time, and it is exactly what you think it is. It is literally a point-and-click adventure about a pharmacist living in the Old West. But it's completely comedic, and it's hilarious, and it's a lot of fun to play.
Want to know what else I think you're way off on, Eric? I don't think Hot Pockets can go in the toaster.
Oh, you can make it work. Apparently you've never lived in a dorm room, although from my understanding your Seattle home is kind of a dorm room.
It is, correct. Oh, did you get an understanding as to my domicile?
Yeah, Brian gave me a little insight. I know he came to stay with you in a little visit, and he gave me a little insight into your domicile.
Yeah, let the word go out. When I say that my place is small and not really set up for guests, I'm not kidding.
Yeah, he said, first of all, he said it wasn't impossible for guests. He slept comfortably. But at the same time, I immediately was like, so how big is it compared to my place? Because, you know, my place is pretty small. And he was like, oh, no, your place is a mansion compared to Tom's
correct,
place.
Correct, yes. Right. Little personal side note, anybody coming to visit Nerdtravaganza Tom in Seattle should be prepared to live in small accommodations.
There is some truth behind that.
Perfect opportunity for a segue, though. Because speaking of small and miniaturization and sort of a paring down for the sake of specialization, I wanted to ask you guys what is up with these Steam boxes, which are basically a stripping away of all of the PC pretense and delivering the Steam experience in a console-like box. So basically, they're taking a run at consoles. Does that show you that these purveyors of PC software still see the console market as valuable or something that they want to, you know, obviously gain headway in? Obviously it does.
Well, I think they're going to admit that it's not really a shot at console gaming. Like, I think they've said that they just wanted to go ahead and do it.
They put money into a venture just kind of like for fun, though. I mean, I obviously they were trying to gain some share of console market share, were they not?
I think it's semantics, because their logic or their wording is that they're trying to make the computer gaming experience more comfortable for the user. Like, who doesn't want to play games sitting on their couch in front of a huge TV now that everyone has a huge TV? And my brain goes, that sounds exactly like a console.
Yes. Yes, and that's, I'd never imagine a serious PC gamer being comfortable on the sofa. Like, I think part of the PC gamer identity is to be hunched over a desk. That's just, I don't know, but I can't imagine, like, a hardcore PC gamer accepting comfort. What do you guys think?
Throw your pelvis out of line and see what you feel about it afterwards.
That's a good point.
I'll be honest. At this point, if I were to become an avid PC gamer and be hunched over my computer daily, I would go out and buy one of those Pilates balls to sit on just to attempt to keep my core in line.
I thought you were going to say that you'd get a standing desk or something.
No, I'm not that adamant about my health. I just don't want to hurt.
I have to confess, when I contemplate building a new PC or going a PC route for gaming, I mean, I like the sitting at a desk experience for work, obviously, but I kind of want to just chill on my couch. The problem is, a sofa is not conducive to a mouse and keyboard, which any PC gamer will tell you is infinitely superior to a controller. So,
They are in the works of their Steam controller that's supposed to take place of the keyboard and mouse.
Nick, it's impossible for any controller to deliver the same fidelity as a precision-weighted mouse and keyboard.
Agreed. At least when it comes to first-person shooters.
I actually cannot argue with that. That is true.
I want to see who's been paying attention to the gaming market for as long as we all should have and probably have been. I went to E3 in 2004, where I had the experience of sitting in a room and being able to play a wonderful console, well, quote-unquote console, called the Phantom.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yikes.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, again, the Phantom was essentially a PC console. It was a PC hardware console that brought console-style gaming to the TV in the similar way that Steam is trying to do now. Everything was downloadable. There were no discs. So again, kind of a marketplace. And this was back in 2004, and it definitely seems like what Steam is trying to do now. But the one positive of this thing... Well, first of all, let's point out that it really lived up to its name in that it never came
yes.
out.
Yes, exactly.
And it was the ultimate in phantomware. It definitely lived up to its name. But the one thing that was incredible about it, and I give it full credit for it, is they developed a lap mouse and keyboard that was kind of this V-shaped flat platform that would sit on your lap. The mouse was in your hand on a platform underneath and the keyboard above. That felt perfect.
Hmm.
I would play with that mouse keyboard on a couch all day long. And they eventually did sell it in limited supply, just the mouse keyboard for any PC or any Mac, basically. Just as a mouse and keyboard, not attached to any console whatsoever.
Hmm.
That might make PC gaming on a sofa way more attractive to me. Brian, where do you come down on this? We've known each other for a long time. I think we both enjoy comfort. But we have both, at the same time, been known to play PC games. So what's your solution?
I don't have any problem using a mouse and keyboard in not a desk. Like, you can put the mouse next to you on the couch and just take up a little bit more room on the couch. No, you don't get to, like, throw your feet up and slum like you might normally, but it's still pretty comfortable. Most people will not immediately know what this looks like, but Tom will think of my EverQuest
days. I was just thinking about that. I answered my own question with my own thoughts. Never mind. Brian was able to split the difference between playing on a PC and being comfortable. Describe your EverQuest posture, Brian.
Well, I mean, this was, Jesus, 99, so I bought a video card with S-Video output and just hooked it straight up to a fairly high-def television and played. I just had my PC display on my television, and I would sit on my couch, and you get a sturdy mouse pad, and just put it wherever. You could play with it on your chest. You could put it in the seat next to you. It wasn't that impossible to do.
Yeah. So would that get Brian kicked out of the PC master race, you guys think?
I mean, I don't know. I think we're splitting hairs at this point. Because to be honest, when I hear people who claim to be the PC master race, I have no idea what they're physically doing to play. I just know they're playing on a PC because they keep telling me they are.
Oh, so... to be considered a member of the PC Master Race, let's define this. Let's move toward the end of the episode by defining this. To be considered racially pure by PC Master Race standards, do you have to play PC exclusively?
I would suspect yes. I've never met a PC player, anyone who identifies as PC, who would touch a console.
Yeah, I think PC hipster might be a more accurate term than PC Master Race.
So that's, as a PC hipster, a less extreme Master Race member?
I guess it could be the radical, because they just can't see themselves or want to be seen playing a console.
So even if I go out tomorrow and buy a $3,000 like awesome PC, the fact that I also play console games means I am excluded from the PC Master Race.
They probably hate you more for trying to marry in.
To marry in!
I know they have a subreddit on Reddit, and I've seen that, like, they'll make posts like, oh, I'm so sorry for playing this on a console, and they'll make posts like that, and I would just roll my eyes at that.
I have seen that kind of smugness on display, too, right?
Yeah, so...
Okay, so they do proselytize, but mainly for the purpose of excluding others. You can marry in, but you'll never be fully accepted. Can any of you guys see yourselves becoming PC Master Racists and ditching your consoles and going over fully to the PC side?
Actually, yes.
Oh my god, I don't even know you anymore.
It does.
They don't make games for Macs.
Oh!
Very nice. They should, but they don't.
What would sway you, Eric?
I would be swayed by something like the Steam Box, because from what I've seen, it's kind of a console experience, but again, I get to do mods and all of those things that are nice on the other end. So I'd like the console experience of sitting on the couch with a nice controller in my hand and playing on a TV and having a really bare-bones, simplistic networking option, and at the same time, having all of those extras still available to me. Now, the problem with it is the price point. Basically, everything I've seen out of every high-end Steam box, which, if you want to consider yourself a PC Master Racist... God, that sounds weird.
Yes.
You obviously want to play on those. You're not getting, you know, the quality that makes PC gaming PC gaming. And at that point, you may as well just buy a high-end computer or assemble your own, from what I've seen the costs of some of these things being.
What are we looking at price-wise? I mean, what have you seen in terms of price point?
I mean, when I see these articles pop up, like, on some of the tech sites that are like, hey, so-and-so announced this, and this company announced that, they range anywhere from $600, I've seen, to $1,800.
Wow.
We go from slightly above a console cost to way above a console cost, which sounds like what PCs already are doing.
And this is for dedicated gaming hardware. You're not running Windows on this. You're running the Steam... Linux or Unix variant, correct? Their OS.
Right, so until I see like a high-end graphics option that costs no more than $500, I have no interest.
And then on top of that, you gotta think about which brand you wanna buy as well. Because...
Gold Star!
Like a 3DO all over again, Brian?
Thank you.
Nice. Can't slip that past me. Yeah, Brian alludes to the 3DO, another attempt to redefine gaming by selling a technology set to various electronics manufacturers so that they could all make their own flavor on it. That was the Panasonic / Gold Star / at least one other company, 3DO, back in the day.
Yeah, I remember that. You know, there have been some companies that we're unaware of that have actually tried that since then, only because those options weren't available here. But surprisingly enough, Nintendo is one of them.
Hmm?
There was a Panasonic-themed or version of the GameCube with a digital LED readout on the front of it.
I have seen photos of this. That's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Powered by GameCube.
Powered by GameCube.
The power of GameCube.
Huh.
Eric, even if you were to plunk down the money on one of those Steam boxes, I don't think you would be accepted into the PC... Master Circle.
You're still a mudblood.
Yeah. Yeah, you're still a mudblood. You're not pure.
No, I'm sure every time I got sniped, I would hear about how I'm probably playing with a controller, and they'd be right.
Well, there is something behind that, though, because I think if you're playing with a controller, and you are at a distinct disadvantage against somebody who's playing with a mouse, right?
Well, it's actually one of the things that I like about console gaming, is the level playing field.
So nobody with, like, an awesome computer has an advantage, or an awesome mouse and keyboard or whatever.
Exactly, not to mention mods, or I mean, there have been cases of hacks in console networking, but yeah, they have really gotten that under control.
You don't have the makings of a PC Master Race member, Eric. I don't want to say racist. I do want to say it. You don't have the makings of a PC Master Racist. You're too good. You're too good a person.
You know, we forget that sometimes. We crap on, like, the Xbox Live community because verbally they can be annoying. But, you know, that takes a mute button and the problem is solved. I have played my share of PC games, especially since I did start avidly online gaming with things like Quake 3 or Unreal Tournament, where it doesn't matter how much you mute because no one's really talking on that PC anyway. People have found ways to make your experience completely and utterly miserable.
The birth of teabagging.
It wasn't even the teabagging. It was literally like the hacking, the network hacking, and so on.
Gross. Yuck.
Watching things freeze up and then all of a sudden it comes back and everyone's dead.
Oh, wow. That's hardcore hackery. Hopefully that doesn't go on these days.
Well, it was really as simple as pressing the hold button on your router, rapidly killing everyone and then undoing it as long as you were the host or you had, you know, the best ping.
Oh, okay. This was for like peer-to-peer hosted matches as opposed to stuff in centralized servers, right?
Right.
Well, these days, even PC stuff is hosted for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the most part. But there's definitely been workarounds. I mean, if you go on YouTube and just Google, you know, pick a modern game that has an online mode and online hack, you can watch people do insane crap.
Yeah, no thanks. I'm not that interested. yeah, I don't see myself becoming an exclusive PC gamer. I've always played consoles. I like a controller. I like the console experience. I don't hate PC gaming. I can see it being a bigger part of my gaming life, but to just ditch my consoles and go straight PC, I don't think so.
I've probably only played 4, maybe 5 console games in the last year. And lately, especially, I'm PC gaming almost every day with MMOs, and I still consider myself a console gamer first. Like,
it's where your heart lives.
It's just a philosophy, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I do. Nick, you sound like you already have one toe dipped in the water. Are we in danger of losing you to PC superiority?
Oh, I think not. I was born a console gamer, and I'll die a console gamer. But I do enjoy my moments in PC gaming. That being said, I could call myself a gamer interracial.
you're PC biracial or something like that.
Yeah, there we go. Something along those lines.
Okay, I gotta share Eric's discomfort with... I know we're saying it, like, totally tongue-in-cheek, PC Master Racist, but even bringing up race in this context, I'm, like, all, like, tiptoeing, like, I'm gonna offend some person. Is he talking about me? I mean, I know he's talking about PC, but does he really mean me? No, I don't.
This is the most un-PC PC conversation.
We're going to have to work that into the title. The tentative title of this episode is PC Master Racist, but I think with clever placement of the question marks, like PC Master Racist, we could get an even better title.
Agreed.
All right, well, angering the internet gods notwithstanding, I think this turned out to be a pretty cool discussion. Any other points you guys want to make on PC versus console gaming? Okay, I'll make two final points then. One, you ain't got no rumble controller in that mouse. Two, ain't no Nintendo happening on PC. Boom. And now I mic drop, and now we're done. To use the mic drop meme. By the way, I'm being infected with meme-itis, and I'm sorry.
Wait, is this where we go ahead and say that PC also has the benefit of emulators?
We could say that. PC does have the benefit of emulators, but if you own all the original systems, you don't need emulators. Actually...
What if I want to play those games that were very difficult to get my hands on, like Bible Quest?
Well, Eric...
If you want to play Bible Quest, you're not going to steal it.
Right. You would be the type of person who would find Bible Quest and trust in the Lord to guide you to a copy of Bible Quest so you could play it as it was intended to be played, unlicensed on a Nintendo.
All right, I have to confess.
Confess!
I actually own Bible Quest.
Why?
Because I had to. I found it at a thrift store like 10 years ago at the swap shop or whatever, and it's on a baby blue cartridge.
Yeah.
and it's the most awkward looking cartridge of all time, and I bought it immediately for 50 cents.
That's what I'm saying. It's an unlicensed cartridge. Like these people's convictions didn't extend to respecting like patent and copyright rights, I guess.
Intellectual property is not in the Bible, Tom.
That's true. I mean, like, slavery is, but intellectual property? Yeah, forget about it. Ooh, that got way too religious bashing, sorry. okay. So, I'll be over to borrow that pretty soon, Eric. But,
I think it's in storage, but yeah we'll have to
dig that sucker out. I will just say this with regard to emulation. This is where I come down as maybe a console master racist. I don't feel an emulated experience on a PC is as pure or real or satisfying as plugging in a cartridge to some outdated piece of hardware and playing it that way. It just doesn't do it for me, man.
It's like reading a book on a Kindle.
Actually, that's true. I don't have that allegiance when it comes to books. I do love my Nook. Brian is a paperback racist. An ink and paper supremacist? Is that what you are? You don't like the e-readers?
I mean, I'll use them, but I do think they're missing something. I have probably 10 or 15 books on my phone that I read at stoplights and whenever else I'm bored. But, it's not the same as holding a book.
Would you consider it your struggle? I'm sorry. This is
ouch.
Too easy.
Ouch, ouch, ouch. we don't want this episode to... Oh, no, I'm not. I'm not going to start in with the puns. We've been on the right direction for so long, I don't want to...
Ouch.
All right. As we now get banned from the internet forever, I think it's time for us to wind this episode down and... do a little promotion as we say adieu. I'll go first by saying that if you liked our podcast or if you consider us racist of some form after listening to this podcast, nevertheless, check us out in the future where we promise to be more considerate of your feelings. Feel free to subscribe to us on iTunes or whatever other podcatching software you happen to use. Write us a review and rate us favorably. And if streaming is more to your liking, if you're an MP3 master racist of some sort, check us out on Stitcher.
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, add us to your Google Plus circle, and join our Nerd Extravaganza HQ Facebook group.
And be sure to check out nerdstravaganza.com. And if you have any questions or comments, send us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
You're just not going to share that, are you? Ever.
I'm okay with that. We're going to let that just keep on going.
Yeah, because Eric's new job every episode is to take us away with a witty one-liner of some sort. So hit it, Eric.
Console Uberalis?
Perfect! I just want to confess something, guys. Like, we weren't, like, I really felt like my hackles getting up, like, really, like, my God, we are being really racist. But we didn't really, just using the term race, right, but using the term racist and master race was like, ugh.